The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 108. Today we have a couple of, I guess you guys are becoming regulars now, and one missing Thomas. Finally, he's got his sleep schedule sorted out, I guess. But today we've got Mikey from Chicagoland.
Hey.
And then we've got T-Cent from Colorado land, right?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Are you northern Colorado?
Yeah, northeastern. So out on the plains, middle of nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I met a guy yesterday named Shad, and he's from northern Colorado. He said he's almost in Wyoming or whatever. So.
Oh, yeah.
This is probably.
He'd be right in my neck of the woods.
Oh, there you go. Rock and roll, man. Yeah. All right. So we actually have a couple of new patrons this go around. We have Jonathan Morrison and Richard Chalice. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I nailed that one. Totally. So why would you become a patron? One, it helps us get to all of the lovely conferences that are going on right now. buy new equipment and things like that. But it also gets you access to the patron-only Slack. And having said that, I installed the Mattermost server this morning. And so we tried to do an import, working out the kinks. It's super strange. Whenever you do the import, for whatever reason, it didn't want to keep everybody's email address. So it's like the beginning of your email address at example.com. So I've got to sort that. It might be easier just to not import anything and then just start from scratch if it's going to do crazy stuff like that. But maybe we can do recent. Anyway, I digress. We're working on it. So I would say probably within the next couple of few weeks, we'll probably try and transition over to Mattermost, which will give us infinite scalability. We'll always have history going back. So Mike won't have to ask the same where do you get your fiber vaults questions multiple times, because it will always be there in perpetuity, for good or for bad, right? So I guess that's kind of it's the curse of the internet. Whatever you say lives forever, so it's going to live forever in that Mattermost.
Yeah, so now it's time for me to see if I can log in and go back and delete all my old posts.
Yeah, I would say we can't abandon the Slack just yet because
no, not quite.
The Mattermost probably isn't 100% operational, but it seems pretty close.
Well, I can't log in, so that's not
well, I totally skipped the whole like using my own email, and I just created a new account, and it's like, oh, and it has stuff from years and years. It's like, wow, it's everything's here. I'm impressed that Slack let everything come back.
Oh, really? So like,
yeah,
from really, really far back, it's in there?
See, beginnings of, I know I've saw something all the way back in 2018, which is when I joined some of my old posts there.
Well, you know what? I went through the Slack console, did the export of data, mm-hmm. and I said all the way back to like October of 2018, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
And I really didn't think it was going to pull all that stuff. So maybe the 10K limit that we have on the view, you can actually still export and get all of that. If that's the case, then we've got the stuff that goes all the way back. That would be pretty neato. So there you go. All right. So we also have a returning sponsor, Sonar. They are a scalable, intuitive, and comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. Learn more at sonar.software. We also have a Sonar channel in the Slack and the Mattermost, so you can pop in there, ask questions, and I guess go back in the time machine and see everything everybody's ever asked about it. So that would be interesting.
So yeah, right now I'm still scrolling back, and I'm way before our 10K limit in the MikroTik channel. So I'm already in October of 2019.
That's interesting.
So, which you don't have access to anymore in the Slack. So, and I'm seeing my posts and everybody else's posts. So it's working. It's working really well.
Oh, rock and roll, man. We've got searchable history in there then.
Yeah.
Cool.
For better or worse.
Yeah, I don't want to go through and clean all that stuff up. And you know what? The backup from Slack was only like 15 megs too. So
what?
Yeah. That was it.
Text is tiny.
It just, all it pulls is text and links. It doesn't pull any files. So any of the screenshots or any of that stuff that people shared isn't going to be there, but everything else will be.
Okay. Well, that's a little sad, but that's still pretty good.
Yeah. Moving forward, it's going to retain all that stuff.
Yeah.
In perpetuity. So hopefully nobody puts anything too big in there. I think I've got enough storage. I follow their calculations to have enough storage space for this foreseeable future, like the next 8 years or so. So I really didn't want to mess with it for a while, but I also didn't want to like make it too tremendously huge and annoying. So we'll see. It, you know what, the interface looks really close to Slack. It just doesn't look quite as polished. So it feels the same. Like I could do colon, thumbs up. And, you know, it'll do the thumbs up emoji and stuff. So it seems like everything is pretty much there. We just got to get Jiffy working and then I'm set.
It, custom reactions.
Oh, yes. You got to transfer all those over because they're so important. Yeah, I get the,
I turned it on. It? So you guys can do
the lighthouse
stuff.
On a hill.
Yeah. The lighthouse at night for sure. And some of the other stuff. All right, so let's talk about a couple of things. There's not a whole lot in the list. I've been scrolling back. I mean, there was a lot of conversation back and forth, but not a lot of things where I just get that 1,000-yard stare and I get tired of like reading whenever I try and aggregate some of this stuff. So there's more that was in there and I just was bad about it. There was a lot in the COVID channel. I just couldn't bring myself to go in there because that's depressing. But there is some good stuff here and there. So I personally have started putting my playbooks and my Ansible playbooks as well as my roles. So I'm converting a lot of the playbooks over to roles in Ansible, which are kind of like a more modular, clean way of using those in your own infrastructure. Right now, I've only converted the roles for RouterOS upgrades and firmware upgrades, but those are probably the two trickiest ones. So those are in there and available on my GitHub, and I will continue to do the updates there and stuff. So jump over there and take a look if you guys are interested. In the course of that, Miller wanted to do like DSA keys on MikroTix, the idea where you can... you can log into them without actually having a username and password. It's kind of a public-private key that you use for SSH. And I went through the... actually got it working. I think I'm not... Did I stop? I stopped somewhere. I got most of it working. I can't remember if I've completed it. No, I think I actually got it all working. All right, we're going to say I got it all working. But the MikroTik documentation says make DSA keys, and that's a total fabrication. You have to actually create them as RSA keys, and then they install fine. So just for anybody out there that's going to do it the manual way, and I'll have those playbooks up in no time. I just found that to be interesting that some of the documentation was old and annoying. Had to dig through the forums to find somebody who had figured out what the answer was.
Yeah, that is a frustration sometimes when you're dealing with MikroTik. Occasionally it's changed and there's just a line, and unless you follow all the changes and lines, you know, and you know this stuff, it's, you know, but that's, you know, why you're getting paid to do your job is to figure that stuff out, I guess.
For sure. Well, once somebody goes through and goes through the trouble of actually making a playbook and then they maintain that stuff, then it's always there. You could just grab it and you'll always have the most up-to-date way. You don't have to actually think of how it works. It's just, it'll be there. So.
Yeah, super handy in that regards.
Hopefully I can
appreciate
make that easier for everybody else. Make my life easier, make your life easier. Really, I've just been using this as a tool to learn my new job as quickly as possible. So it's good for everybody.
Yeah. For sure. No, and that sounds way better than my MikroTik script, which was just two reboots in a row with on a schedule to do updates in the middle of the night so that I don't have to be awake for it.
Well,
exactly.
To be honest with you, if you look at the way I do the upgrade, it actually kind of does that. because Ansible, it doesn't do interactive prompts. Like, so when you SSH to a MikroTik and you say reboot, it says, are you sure? You have to hit yes. Ansible doesn't handle that. So to kind of work around that, if a script actually calls it, then it will just reboot, right? If a script in MikroTik calls it. So it, I kind of create a quick scheduled entry and it puts it like, I don't know, like a minute in the future or something like that, and then says, you know, reboot. And then it kind of takes care of itself after that. So,
oh, that makes me feel so much better about myself. Like, I was like, oh, because that's exactly how I would go about doing it. Is I upload the file, do a system reboot, and then system router board upgrade. That's delayed like 5 minutes so that the first reboot and upgrade happens. And then the second one hits and does the upgrade, and then waits a minute for that to do its thing. And then I do another reboot, and life's good.
That's
and
baller.
Usually when I wake up in the morning, there isn't a bunch of stuff broken.
I mean, that's not too far off of what I'm doing here, except I have like a list of 150 MikroTiks, and it will say, you'll just tell it, hey, schedule it this time, do a router OS upgrade. And so then it'll just plot through each one of them. It'll do the upgrade. And then you say, okay, schedule 30 minutes later, it's firmware upgrade. And then it'll go through and just start.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So it's
so
it kind of makes it convenient. And then even then you could just pick out various groups. So you can set up a group and say, hey, call it like, I don't know, whatever the site is, Canary. And so it's just a handful that you're going to test it on, and you can have it do that and then let it run for a week and make sure everything's okay. And then you can blast on everything else if you want. Pretty convenient.
That's slick. I'm going to have to start learning me some Ansible.
This week's going to be my last quiet week for a while. And I'm going to hammer out my presentation, which is basically going to be 0 to 60 using Ansible on MikroTik stuff. So really, the presentation is going to be less than 30 minutes, and it will give you everything you need to be up and... Like, I think the Ansible install part takes about 40 seconds, and then pulling your playbooks takes, I don't know, another minute, and then creating your host file will take you however long it takes you to put your devices in there, and then you just tell it to run these things. They're already pre-built for you, but it gives you examples on this is what they're doing inside, so you don't actually have to know all this stuff, but it shows you how it all works. And then when you look at it, it's really like pseudocoding, you know, like if this thing happens, do this. But it's really just, if you look at it, you're like, oh, it's just telling it run this MikroTik command, and oh, it's telling it run that one and that one. So it's really intuitive and simple. I like it. I am jazzed. So it's going to be my first one, which is going to be funny because I'm going to put this out, and then a year from now I'll be like, I'll look at that and I'll say, oh Jesus, that was trash. I can't believe I put that stuff out. And then I'll probably update it, which will be great. So that it looks less trashy.
Yeah.
I'm a kind of trashy guy, so it sort of is true to form, you.
Hey, as long as it may be trashy, but as long as it works, that's the key.
Oh, it'll work. Oh, no, it's going to work. Which I like, you know, and it's funny. I'm going to be working at Red Hat. I'll be on the Ansible. I guess I'll be on the Tiger team, which sounds baller. Until
Tiger King.
yeah, exactly. I'm the Tiger King team. Yeah, that thing is going crazy. The little bits and pieces of Tiger King I saw when I was walking through the living room of my wife watching that. I think I got like almost like a contact high, but it was like contact intelligence loss. It just made me dumber just being in the proximity of that show. It's just, it makes me feel terrible. I don't know why people watch that for the same reason they watch, you know, like videos of people getting injured, I guess. It's just, you like the slow... It's like a slow motion. Have you ever seen two boats, like two giant boats crashing each other? You know what I mean? It's just, they're slowly crumpling you know, right in front of you, and it's sort of hard to, I don't know, that's Tiger King for me. That, it's like a dumpster full of dirty diapers on fire. It's just awful. I don't know how else to describe it.
It reminds me of the the people who have like weddings. There's a TV series of people who get married to somebody just getting out of prison or still in prison and stuff.
Oh, Love After Lockup. So you're talking about?
Yeah, there it is. Love After Lockup. I have never even watched the show, but the just advertisements. Just
I've never watched
feel...
it, but I've heard people talk about it who have watched it, and it sounds awful.
Yeah. I think about it, and it's just like, oh, just no, I can't. It's that reality. It's just, it gets more and more grimy every year.
It makes That's me so uncomfortable. It makes me want to watch that kind of stuff like through my fingers, just covering my face. It's like, oh my God, it's terrible.
I'm not. Please don't. No. Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's awful. So let's see what else is going on in the world. Somebody was asking about online platforms for schools. I guess their local school is going to try and do something. And it seems like if you haven't already been doing some kind of online school thing, now it's going to be a really tough time for you to adopt it. I know our kids use Schoology. They've been using that here, like in our Bryant College Station, in all the districts for quite a while. It's a little clunky. It looks ugly. And man, have they been choking lately. Like, just hasn't been loading. Content's not pulling. My kid did like a ton of work, and he's like trying to upload it, and he's like, it's not doing anything. It's just sitting there. He's like, I've been trying all day. I was like, all right, well, it's not much more we can do. You know, it's a platform. You know, I know another guy that does, what'd you call it? Software as a service. It's not really, I mean, it's sort of like software as a service. And he said that they've been ordering servers by the pallet load, trying to keep up with demand that they've been seeing. All of a sudden, it's just everything skyrocketing.
Oh yeah, no, it's well. I mean, I think Wispa was just talking about how, or for, like most people, were seeing a more than 35% increase in just raw traffic, and that traffic's going somewhere, and it has to come from somewhere.
Yeah,
you know, everybody's just getting hammered left and right, and. You know, the Facebook groups, we were just seeing all these people talking about like, hey, how do I do work for home stuff for people? You know, VPNs, phone calls. Oh, I bet the Ethereal people are, their lives are probably glorious right now. Just for how much they're able to get as far as new people wanting to do phone stuff. It's got to be great.
Who's, and sucky. I'm unfamiliar with Ethereal. Who are those guys?
I think that was actually one of the few interviews at Wispa Palooza that actually worked out. they have a white box phone service. Okay. So you can just sign up with them. They hook in and tell you how to connect people's phones to the network, and then everything just looks like it's your business, and then but they take over and run everything for you in the background, and they can even do tech support and stuff like that for you too. And they're based out of Colorado, if I recall correctly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so they're actually over in my neck of the woods. I feel a little bit bad that my company's not going to them. Hey, but I didn't hear about them until after we made the decision.
Worries. Mikey, your phone service, is that all PSTN, or are you guys actually pulling SIP trunks over the internet?
Both.
Okay.
So we've got, you know, our main switch is in the local CO that has like all the tandem and, you know, all the old traditional PSTN stuff. But I'm not expanding that as, like, I'm not continuing down the TDM road when I expand. getting T1 costs, you know, point-to-point T1 costs to different tandems is just like, there's still hundreds of dollars. Like I got a quote for a T1 to one of the other tandems, and it was more than my 1 gig wave into Chicago. And I'm like, no. I can't do this.
I was just curious from like a VoIP provider's perspective, what's service been like pulling SIP trunks over the internet right now? Just as I'm pretty, I mean, so I've been working from home for a really long time, and I use Suddenlink here off of a cable modem, and I've noticed some weird glitchy behavior in the last 2 weeks. You know, just services that are normally just there, you don't think about it, just kind of stuttering a little bit every now and then. So I was just curious how people are, what their experiences are like for VoIP over the internet.
Sure, sure. And so then we do a lot of like VoIP facing our customers, but then that's mostly on our network.
Yeah, on net. Yeah.
So that's easy enough to handle. One of the customers is a travel agency, and they have people mostly in Chicagoland, but all over the country that work from home, and so they've got, you know, we've got Comcast and Cox and Suddenlink and MediaCom and Frontier and AT&T, you know, all these things, and no one's complained yet, so
that's good.
So we must have good connectivity in Chicago, because yeah. I'm pretty sure their networks are trash.
Yeah, everybody's been seeing a lot of increases, which I thought was interesting. So in the data center world, I'm not looking at my customers aren't eyeball networks, right? I don't have a bunch of users and houses trying to just get to the internet. Most of them are hosted platforms, you know, or they are small cloud platforms, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. It could be a lot of people where their users come in via VPN, or just, I mean, you know, it runs the gambit of all kinds of stuff. And to be honest with you, I haven't seen the exponential growth that a lot of other people have. Having said that, our Houston network actually seems to have less throughput, not by a lot, but a little bit of less, lower utilization kind of across all of my transits there, which is super weird. I really would have expected that one to go up. However, our Bryan location, it has gone up probably 10% or better on utilization there. So Bryan's more kind of a DR play. Almost none of the customers in the Bryan College Station area actually most of the customers in the data center in Bryan College Station aren't in Bryan College Station. They're everywhere else, you know, close to the coast and Houston and all that stuff. So I guess they're really starting to try and activate some of those services. And we've seen some of our DR customers actually go ahead and preemptively declare they wanted to get their users out of Houston. So they're bringing them down here and housing them in hotels and stuff like that down here and having them work out of the DR area, at least some of the key employees.
That's interesting. Yeah, actually, you're not the first person to mention that they've seen decreases in the Houston, kind of some Texas area. I was seeing somebody else on Facebook mentioning that as well. I was like, that's really interesting. Greg mentioned that too. So it'd be really interesting to see somebody's actually tracking that.
Some of the correlations I noticed were, it's a lot of petroleum companies, right, in Houston and stuff like that. And if you're doing pipeline control, you're required by law to actually have backup SCADA controls, consoles and stuff like that. And so we're seeing a lot of those guys get out of Houston because they're anticipating the whole city getting like hard locked down. And so it's going to be hard for their employees to actually make it to the control centers because they're just scattered to the winds. You know, they live everywhere. It's going to be problematic for them to get through. So if they go to a smaller place, you know, where they have DR, then it's going to be a lot easier for those guys to go to and fro to actually hit those pipeline control centers and stuff. So it makes sense. And so, you know, if you're shifting gears and pulling your utilization out of your primary and moving it to your backup, then I could see why those data centers would, you know, be less used. Of course, some of those customers, you know, we have seen utilization go up in Houston. Some of them are like online medical hosting platforms and stuff like that. So people are just, you know, I guess the doctor's offices are going ham right now, and people are just trying to move more to that online telehealth stuff or whatever. So
I've heard that you know, people like Zoom and WebEx are just trying to scale out because their systems are just, you know, falling on their faces left and right.
They gotta be. With,
shit, yeah.
And so the PBX that we use, it has a web meeting component. Now you can set up your PBX wherever you want it, on a Raspberry Pi, in the cloud, you know, on your own virtualization platform. But the web meeting aspect historically has been hosted somewhere. Like, you can choose which, like, you know, which location you prefer, but it's not yours. And so they were talking it all up, hey, you know, adding new servers and this and that. But they've been talking a couple years about how they were going to make a local version. Like, that would be handy right now, because everybody who's spinning up things in the cloud is running out of resources spinning things in the cloud, because that's what everybody's doing.
Hmm.
Whereas if I could do that on my own infrastructure, I've got plenty of capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So long as most of that stuff stays on net, right? You're going to be good.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, even if not, I mean, it's still, you know, we've got enough internet capacity too.
That's what I was thinking about. I've got tons of overhead. That's one of the things that I was so happy for, was that I have so much extra capacity at the data center. Having said that, I've got, was it like 5 more days and then I walk away from that place. So I was, you know, I was glad I could at least give them that. Like, in this time right now, this is one thing you don't have to worry about. But then I was thinking about, you know what? It doesn't matter how much capacity I have. If those ISPs have oversold the hell out of it, like, you know, ISPs do, then when the time comes and I need it, it may not be there. So it's kind of double-edged sword. We did see, who was it? I think it was Simon put up that Mbork, and I'm unfamiliar with these guys. It's a UK fiber-based provider. They put out a notice to all their customers that they're suspending SLAs during the COVID crisis. So if there's a cut, that's like, brah, we're getting to it when we can. Or if your service is down, we're trying everything we can to get there and you know, maintain that infrastructure. And it just, it made me kind of think, you know, being in the data center world, that's one of the main reasons you go to a data center, right? One is connectivity options, and two is your SLA, your service level agreement, guaranteeing that you're still going to be up. And if all of your providers start dropping their SLAs to you, does that mean I get to drop my SLA to my customers? I'm pretty sure I don't, you know. I guess, what do you call this, an act of God? Is that kind of
work
the,
harder?
The sinner?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of tricky.
Act of God level in that regards. I mean, but oof. I would hate to be the guy doing that.
Yeah, it's been interesting on some of the Facebook groups seeing people comment about how all of this has been happening, and that their pipe isn't full, but yet they're still experiencing things they can't explain.
Yeah.
And of course I come in with some snarky, don't depend upon generic, you know, DIA. And
yes, yes, go to IAX. Yes.
It well, yeah, but like, you know, the less that's in your control, the less that, you know, or the more likely that you're going to have problems like that. You know, when you're just depending on AT&T for all your connectivity, well, when AT&T fills up, you're full.
Yeah, when you got a single provider. Or if that guy's having a bad day. James was talking about how, because he was kind of filling me in on it, how they were getting, what is it, a VPN tunnel, like, dropped at 10:30 at night, and they couldn't figure out what was going on, and they had assumed it was on the other guy's side, and so they ended up getting up to the carrier. I don't know which carrier it was. So they had everybody on the call with the tech trying to troubleshoot, and he's like, Have you figured out what the problem is yet? And I think the tech said, if I knew what the problem is, it would already be fixed. So that guy's having a really bad day right now. Anyway, they rebooted a line card in the middle of the day, which is like, whoa, brother. That's pretty crazy. As soon as they rebooted it, everything started working again. So they were apparently having some major VoIP issues going through that pop. And yeah, so it was a really bad day. And I think he said that the guy on the phone was like, what were we up to before? And he goes, 2 terabits per second on that card. He goes, where are we at now? He goes, well, we're about 2 terabits per second. So I don't think they were exactly prepared for the load they found themselves under. So if that guy's saying that kind of stuff on the phone, they're probably having a really bad day. They're gonna have a really bad month.
It's I think that's part of why I've seen a lot of mid-sized hosting companies. You know, they may only have facilities in, say, Chicago, but they build a, you know, 6-POP national network so that they can help kind of mitigate some of those issues where, you know, they buy, you know, a transit port in, you know, Seattle, LA, Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, New York. And then they have their own waves connect everything together. So that way it's, well, if Chicago's full or there's a problem in Chicago, you know, we'll just shut that down and pull it in from somewhere else instead, knowing that their wavelength isn't oversubscribed.
Well,
you know,
I mean, I've played the internet plumber game long enough, and I you guys have too, probably at this point. And probably most of the guys listening have at this point as well, but you know, it's very much a trust relationship with your upstreams, with your IXs, with anybody you're pulling connectivity from, right? If you're transiting their network, you're basically saying, hey, please don't screw me over, guy or gal or non-binary or whatever you happen to be. You know, it's like I liken it to being on you're driving on a road, right? You're trusting that everybody else isn't going to swerve in your lane and crash into you, right? And they trust that you're not going to do that. Stuff sometimes goes wrong. So imagine you've got 6 POPs all over the country, and Google's AS is preferred through a single one of them, and that single one has problems. Guess what you're going to have is a really bad day, right? Because if I've seen it before where a router will lock up, but it's still sending you routes, and it's still advertising your routes out, but it's blackholing everything that's moving through it. I've seen that more than once. I've seen links overloaded with congestion, and so you're still passing some traffic through there, but not enough, or you know, to actually, I mean, you're seeing like 40% packet loss on your network, but everything's still technically up and working. So it doesn't really matter how much you dilute it. You can attempt to mitigate that stuff with dilution, like having enough upstreams where hopefully that router will do what it's supposed to do and just completely drop traffic. But when that doesn't happen, you're kind of shit out of luck. And that's where forward-looking systems have really saved my ass in the past, because they're constantly testing. And so when it sees Google go down, it'll pull that carrier out of the mix and shift everything to somebody else. So it's not enough to just have dilution. I mean, I don't even know if dilution is the right word, but you know, enough upstreams to kind of share the load amongst multiple things. When somebody has a really bad day and something goes wrong, where it can shift off of that. Because, I mean, I guess you could still do it manually, right? You could still try and detect where the problem is, do some traits routes, figure out who's having a problem, and then try and shift traffic off. I mean, you could still do that manually, but how long is that going to take you to figure out? And if it's 3 a.m. and you get woke up, how much extra time is that going to take you to figure out?
Yeah. I see that talked about back and forth a lot on, like, Nanog. You know, using these automated, you know, quality influenced BGP management platforms. And, you know, you see the people that see a problem and want to solve it. And then you see, you know, super network engineer that, you know, he's the only, you know, I'm only going to do things manually. I'm always going to, you know, console into my Cisco and, you know, pound away at the CLI, and I'm going to fix everything by hand. No, you're not. I mean, you might, but your competitors aren't, and there's a reason for that.
And you know what?
Yeah, eventually.
I was going to say there's a decent bit of skill required to do that. And you have to have enough cojones to feel comfortable doing that stuff, right? So a lot of these guys listening probably only have two upstreams. What happens when they pick the wrong upstream, right? They're like, oh, this is the one with the problem. They try and move everything off, right? I'm assuming most of the guys listening to this don't, like we do in the data center world, give 100% SLA to customers, which means I don't get to pick the wrong one. You know, I can't jack around. And every second, I'm like, you know, there's a calculated number of dollars that I'm losing. So no human can do it nearly as quickly as a machine can. Now, are they infallible? No, because they're made by man, right? So anything we make is inherently flawed. But is it consistently better at finding the problem and rooting it out? Oh, yeah. It is like, it's helped me sleep so many times, and it's helped me avoid disaster over the last, I don't know, 7 years. A multitude of, has it been 7 years? I don't know. It's been a really long time. It feels like a really long time that I've had it in place. And it's really nice. Now, can I imagine like the big boys doing it? Not necessarily, but I can imagine the middleman, you know, like people like us using it fairly effectively.
Yeah.
I could see the big boys, you know, someone like, you know, NTT or you know, like that scale, developing it themselves, not going out and buying a Noxion box or, you know, whoever makes the box today, but they have their, you know, they're already doing extensive testing of things themselves. You know, and I could see them putting some sort of, you know, if then logic into a script and you know, managing it internally.
I know I know Nick Braulio's screaming at his phone right now when he's listening to this, because he doesn't subscribe to manipulating routes artificially. He's not a big fan of that. And I don't know how I would feel about that in the middle of a big carrier network, you know, them artificially manipulating routes and stuff like that. But as an end customer, you know, or kind of a data center provider like that, I feel a lot better about it.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I know how much better it's made my life.
Yeah. The guy who's not here, he has said, at least when I've talked to him, you know, for inside of your own network, do whatever the heck you need to make sure that the network stays up. And I mean, I think he would mainly be against affecting routes that you're passing through to somebody else, because then you are taking data away from other people that they can use to make a good decision. So, at least maybe that's not the way he would exactly put it, but I mean, God, I don't think I know I don't see any problem. Like, for my personal, like, the traffic coming out of my network, I'm going to direct it one way or another, just because I mean, not all of my routes are symmetrical, even. Like, I can't have the preferred route going across my 100 meg connection because, well, I only have 100 megs of that, and that can only be very special stuff. So, you know, that's at least in my opinion. Like, if it's inside your network, just do it. Like, you're already going to be doing it just by, if you have multiple edge routers and just deciding which router gets the traffic first, because that router is going to prefer its stuff that's connected to it over anything else, if everything else is equal.
Mm-hmm. You know, something else that kind of, I mean, there's a lot of things that sort of feed into this and off of this, and one is a lot of the a lot of the streaming services have cut down their bitrate, right? So was it like Netflix, I think, cut down, and I think YouTube is going to like standard def, but you have the option to go back to high def if you just click it or whatever. But I've also noticed that, well, to me, that makes sense. And I think that will help things tremendously by lowering the stream quality. But I've also noticed that game services now are saying that they're slowing down downloads. So you can't download as high rate of speed, right?
Yeah, I've seen PlayStation say that, and I've seen Akamai, you know, on their CDN, you know, they're trying to control some of that stuff.
You know what I found interesting, though, is I think the streaming video, I think cutting down quality will help everybody. But I think slowing down game services, I was thinking about this in the terms of a WISP, and you guys are better equipped to talk about this than I am. I don't know that that necessarily helps a WISP. So say this WISP, say you're a WISP, say you've got a gig coming in and your users are using 800 megabits, right? So your pipe's not full, so you have no problems. If they suddenly slow down all the game streaming services, now instead of this one guy downloading a game for 6 hours, he's downloading it for 24 hours straight. So multiply that by all of your users that are doing that, which means there's a ton of people consuming airtime on your radios that they wouldn't have been before. So now there's contention. There's you know, there's fewer people that can talk simultaneously, but it's just the nature of Wi-Fi. So would it actually make it worse for your wireless network for gaming services to slow this stuff down if your overall pipe isn't already full?
It's a different question, but a similar answer to what I said in one of the Nanog threads. That the problem traffic, or the traffic that's being modified to be more accommodating, isn't the only traffic on the pipe.
Right.
You know, if there's a microburst of, you know, say your 800 megs becomes 900 megs for 30 seconds for whatever reason. For 30 seconds, you have bad phone calls, you have bad video conferences, you have, you know, everything goes to crap for a little bit, but then it comes back, and your 5-minute average still only showed 800 meg. A lot of these services that were ramping up the usage of now because of work from home and tele whatever are very very delicate, you know, any problem along the way and they're gonna fall on their face, whereas an FTP download, an HTTP download, a Netflix stream, if it falls on its face, it recovers and it doesn't matter that it fell on its face. And so actually one of the important people at the network who was being talked about on Nanog, when I made that sort of comment, but publicly, they responded privately and said, like, in all caps, thank you. 'Cause like, they're trying to say, you know, we're not the only thing on your pipe and, you know, we can handle it, but they can't.
And so what you're getting into, Greg, also is kind of theory in bandwidth limiting and how to get people good service, or like service that feels really good. One thing I would say is, like, as far as game download stuff, nobody in my network is really going to notice Steam maximum bandwidth that you can download your game to what are they limiting it to, 25, 50 meg, whatever. I don't know, but most of my customers are not even at that speed,
right?
And even if they are, their Xboxes are on a crappy Wi-Fi connection, so they're just never going to notice
right.
the difference. So in that regards, it's not going to be a significantly huge beneficial factor for WISPs in that the guy who is going to be downloading for 8 hours is still going to be downloading for 8 hours because the limiting factor wasn't how fast the internet was. It was how fast you're delivering the internet to him. But in general, yeah, you're going to have more of that, a user taking up time on your access point. And yes, you really do. A lot of the times, if you have the available bandwidth, it's better to slam it down and get that person whatever they're requesting and get that data to them so that your access point can forget about them and move on to the next request as fast as possible. And that will help you increase your overall throughput and secondarily just make people feel like your internet's way better. So that's why most bandwidth limiting systems have a bursting option and wherein they will allow somebody to go above their rate limited speed for a period of time, just so that you get a little bit snappier and you can, you know, it feels better to them and it gets them off of your network and trying to do stuff. So it's not only for access points, but you know, your router has to keep track of every single connection that's open and trying to do stuff, especially if you're NATing. So, you know, it's less stress on your infrastructure, hopefully.
Yeah. I know.
That's the idea there.
In the high-density game, whenever I was playing that for a minute, we put no rate limits on users, right? So the idea was let's get them off the wire as absolutely fast as we possibly can. Let's let them pull whatever it is they're going to pull and they shut up, just because there was so much interference in there. Because, I mean, you've got, I don't know, 18,000 fans in there. You're expecting half of them to be on the Wi-Fi. It is a noisy environment. And then, oh, by the way, let's put a big salad bowl on top so we can reflect all the RF back around. We got a big Thunderdome for Wi-Fi is basically what it was. I know it's a different animal. When you're doing fixed-based wireless outdoor, but always that kind of stuff just got burned into my brain, and so I always think about that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, and if you can't, like, I know back when I was on the DSL reports forums a lot, they had, I can't remember what his name was, but he was really famous in the Ubiquiti forums for a really long time, but he talked about actually how he just had a single plan for his customers, and that was just an internet connection plan, and then they got whatever he could deliver to them at whatever point in time. He didn't have different speeds, which was a really cool idea. I don't know how you would explain that and have customer education, but in general, as long as you had, you know, didn't have somebody who was a huge bandwidth hog, you could probably do a lot of really cool stuff with that. But bandwidth hogs ruin it for everybody.
That sounds like a bunch of hippie stuff to me.
Yeah.
Free range.
I guess one problem with the get them on and off as fast as you can, opposed to slowing them down, is that makes sense if you have a 1 gigabyte file that needs to be transferred. I don't know if it actually makes a difference or not, but if you told me that, okay. But if you're streaming Netflix, you know, or let's say Disney Plus, because it's worse, you know, Disney Plus at 4K, you know, you're chewing 40 some megs a second. Whereas on a standard 1080, Netflix is only 5. And so if you give them more speed, they're going to, the server ramps up to a higher bit rate because it's available. So there's more bits flying. And did the customer really gain anything? No, they really didn't. But they consumed four times, 10 times that I'm, you know, the amount of traffic on the network.
Yeah, and that's then your the where you have to make the debate and make the decision of like, okay, how are you going to do this in such a way? Because yeah, and there's plenty of people who, you know, they're going to be watching, you know, they don't need to get a 1080 or 4K stream to their 1080p TV monitor or TV screen, but the Roku just does. And actually, I'm not certain. I'm just going to throw Roku under the bus here because I've interacted with their products a lot, but I don't. Not going to say they actually do it, but I know I've seen products that will say, "Oh, this is a, you know, 4K TV monitor or whatever. I can display whatever you give to me," and Netflix just starts pushing it down, and it was like this 720p. Naive, just horrible, junky TV screen, and it's like trying to pull like 50 megs just to watch a Netflix show. And it's like, what the heck is going on? And when we finally tuned that down and said, nope, force it to this, things worked really well for that customer. And I don't even remember what the device, but it was a Roku-esque device that was just being really, really junky on that. So yeah, if you can, that is true, you know, if you're, running into that, but okay, you know, there's going to be people who are going to abuse the system one way or another. Which way do you want to go? What do you like to support would be the ended question.
Which is your favorite kind of abuse?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you like to be abused? What's your favorite way?
Pick your poison. Good times. Oh man! So what else happened this week? There was this hit me. I don't know how many. Probably nobody else on here was affected, but the DNSSEC look-aside auto key expiration happened. So there's, and I'm going to totally butcher this, but there's like these DLV records that were in place, kind of temporarily while DNSSEC infrastructure was put in place. You could do kind of like these. I think it happened to do with like. Domains and subdomains, like not all the parts would actually be secured with DNSSEC, and so this was kind of a bridge to kind of, you know, until everything could be taken care of. Anyway, look-aside was rendered moot back in September of 2017 with the signing of the roots and all that stuff, but it was still put in place. It was still there, and a lot of people's Bind9 implementation still looked for those records. And so as soon as those jokers expired, two of my DNS servers just immediately just stopped doing any resolution of any kind. I was like, oh, nope, sorry. So it took me a hot minute to figure out what was going on, and then I turned off DNSSEC, which is not ideal, but resolution started happening again. You know, resolvers, that is. And then John was kind enough to point out on the, I think the Nanog list, that some other people had noticed it, and somebody from dlv.isc.org said, apparently we let our signatures expire. We're fixing it now. We apologize for this. this was an accident. We did not do this on purpose. But then they went on to say, you shouldn't be using this anyway, so go turn it off, which I had already done at this point. But yeah, I said that was funny. It's just like, oops, we made a mistake and we let our certificates expire. Sorry about that. I wonder how much of the internet that broke really quickly, because it broke a little chunk for me.
I saw it about the same time. Like, I didn't put two and two together right away because I was kind of ignoring the list. But it came through about the same time that you were posted in Slack. I saw it come through Nanog and on the Bind user list. You know, people, what's going on?
Hmm. So, okay. I wasn't the only one that noticed it, evidently. if you had more than just those two DNS servers configured, you were okay. But if you were just using those two, man, you had a bad time. So that was a fun one. I thought Friday was going to be quiet. Nothing since the moment I put in my 2 weeks notice, I have not had like a quiet moment. Like, if I'm not documenting something, something's blowing up. It's punishing me. It's punishing me on the way out the door. But hopefully everything will be quiet very soon. I'm anticipating a quiet next week. There's not a whole lot of it left. I have to work, so. And
congratulations.
I said, tell me everything you need now, because I don't know how much you're getting out of me next week. Oh, man. Speaking of DNS, Nick Braulio is doing, I guess you would call it a crowdsourced, community-sourced DNS testing initiative. So he's got some quick, what is it? I guess some quick instructions up on dns.qosbox.com. And you can paste that in, I think, into a Ubuntu server. I think he's got instructions for a couple of different ones. And then I think you email him the keys you generate, and you get thrown into his smoke ping instance. So he's got stuff from all over the world just kind of keeping tabs on how the DNS resolvers are doing at the moment.
Yeah, actually, that's as my head's been turned away from the camera, one of my three networks I have boxes on wasn't reporting correctly. And so I've been trying to figure out why that wasn't reporting data to Nick correctly.
Yeah, still a work in progress. He's just gotten it up not too long ago, so should produce
some
interesting
information. And he's making it look, he's making it look way cleaner now too, and really cool info. You can see, everybody in the Slack group who's been doing it, and he's going across to. How many is this? 1, 2, 12, 15 odd different public DNS providers. And it's really cool information, and really just, I don't know what the benefit is going to be for the world for this info, but it's definitely going to be something of note, usable by somebody say, hey, this is broken.
There's tons of people, I think, that are really curious about the data that's going to come out of all this COVID stuff. And this is just going to be another really interesting point. You're going to be able to cross-reference this with everything else. I think it's, in the end, I was telling somebody the other day that just how beautiful I think data is, and especially all this stuff that we've been pulling together now. Now that we're seeing all these spikes and you just see everybody posting their graphs and stuff like that, it's going to be interesting to see what somebody does with all this data once they aggregate it together.
Yeah, definitely super, super interesting. More data, it's always good.
Yeah, I think that
if you run a network or have access through someplace to the internet, feel free to set it up. I think Nick would love to get more people. I think he's looking for Australia now and Asia. Yeah, Africa.
It pretty much anywhere other than the U.S., I think.
Yeah. I was going to say I could drop a node, but I think he's probably got plenty here in the States, but I don't know.
I think he'll wants a node wherever you can get a node. But he really wants them other places. And the more remote or odd the location, the better. So, like, if you've got a node on some, Pacific island, he wants something there.
Somebody in Hawaii?
Well, no, like not even Hawaii. Like, some, American Samoa or Fiji or one of those tiny things or maybe something that only has a satellite connection,
I mean, it'd be interesting to see Puerto Rico, Jamaica, all those island nations. That'd be cool. All right, let's see what else. While we're talking about it, I think somebody mentioned VPNs. Obviously, I've had to slap up a few VPNs really quickly. I'm sure everybody listening to this has had to slap up some. I put up one. So we've got an ASA that's doing VPN concentration. It's acting as a firewall, number one. But it's sitting at, it averages about 70% CPU load. And so the company has, 150 employees that they're probably going to all just snap their fingers and move to remote if they haven't already. And I was thinking, I don't know if we should chance that. So we went ahead and set up a MikroTik to be a VPN. And somebody else was asking about two-factor authentication for VPN. And the way we do it is through Radius server. So whenever the users log in, it makes a Radius call back to a server that's doing the two-factor authentication interaction with some other service, that will text you or whatever it is. I don't know. But I noticed in our ASAs, I think we had the timeout for the Radius messages at like 3 minutes right? Because sometimes it takes the two-factor stuff a little bit of time to get out there into the user or whatever. But MikroTik only lets you set that to a max of 1 minute. So I was thinking that's probably okay during normal times, but now I'm assuming those two-factor companies are probably under additional load, which means their service is probably going to be just a little bit slower. So hopefully everything works out. People might have to take a couple of swings at it. I'm not sure. I wish they would allow you to kind of increase that timer a bit more, but you know, there's not much I can do about that.
Speaking of VPNs, this is just a plea to go out to all those people who manage laptops or computers that could be taken home to somebody's home internet and then may stop working because of one reason or another. Particularly if you hard set the DNS to your internal business DNS IPs, that's a huge pain in the neck to have to diagnose, like, okay, why is this not working? And then secondarily, what I've had to do is hijack any of those connections, send them over to my DNS server so that your employee laptop is able to do the DNS lookup back to your VPN and then connect back to your VPN, and then it'll be happy. But until that point, the customer doesn't have internet and they can't connect to the VPN, and it looks like it's my stuff's broken and it doesn't look like your stuff's broken. So stop that.
How many of those have you run into so far?
This week there was two people, but luckily months and months and months ago, I had this one customer who just kept on having, like, it would work. The telltale thing is it would work when he was at his hotel, but it wouldn't work when he was back at my, using my internet. Hmm. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? And so, like, going along, and of course, it's a locked-down business laptop, so I can't make changes to anything or access a bunch of the, like, inner Windows settings menus. So you're just, like, trying to guess what's going on. And then eventually I realized he's not using my DNS server, and he needs to do a DNS lookup, and that's why it keeps on failing and why nothing's working. And then eventually luckily I had a MikroTik hit the customer's location, and I was like, okay, here, we'll just NAT this over to my DNS server. Life's good. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. But last week I had a customer, no MikroTik router, because I'm trying to use Cambiums, and I couldn't hijack her DNS connections going out. So I was kind of up a creek without a paddle, without eventually what we were trying to do was set up a new VPN connection that just had the IP address for the business VPN server, but that wasn't working either, so she's kind of just up a creek till I get a MikroTik into her house to make it work for her. Otherwise she just has to use her cell phone provider, her hotspot, because cell phone companies just hijack DNS. FYI.
Yeah, it's a couple of years ago, I had a case where an employee that didn't work anywhere near here, you know, they worked on the other side of the country, laptop, they didn't know the name and password to get into the laptop. And so trying to think of how to say, well, how can I fix that? Like, I don't know what the admin password is. So here, you know, I mailed you the CD, like the Microsoft, I forget what it's called now, Dart disk, and steps to walk through how to reset the admin password. And they couldn't figure it out, even with screenshots. So I thought, well, you know, how do I solve this in the future? And I was looking to see, I'm like, surely you can just start a VPN with the system, and as long as it has internet, it phones home, and then now it's on the domain, and then now I can get in. Well, as it turns out, before Windows 10, Microsoft had no native way of doing that. You had to run another command that would force a VPN connection up. And it worked. Windows 10, they built it in. Great. You know, so that at the login screen, if you want, you can be logged into your VPN. But I believe the other side of the VPN has to be a Windows Server 2016 or 2019. And I'm like, God dang it. It's like, I don't want that. I want it to be a Microtik. I don't want my Windows Server to be sitting on the internet waiting for randos to connect to it. So I've had to keep with the non-native methods, but yeah, it's definitely VPNs are a problem.
Yeah. So
everybody's gonna be running into it. I'm sure there's a lot of people Googling for VPN stuff right at the moment.
But, yeah, I think half this podcast we just talk about what we saw on Nanog. Nanog was talking about this. And I saw a couple guys say that just within the past 6 months, they moved anything they would need into a web-based session of some kind, eliminating their need for VPNs. Everything was just on the internet. You know, it was behind a walled garden of some kind. You know, you had to log in to get to it, but... I was like, well, that's...
Lucky timing.
A, lucky, but B, yeah, that's probably where things are going, and probably, in 10 years, will VPNs still be a thing? I mean, there's always going to be legacy stuff, but as far as day-to-day most people, still have a need for a VPN in 10 years.
I still like VPN when I'm traveling, just for anonymity, just to... traffic or send all my stuff through to some secure location and then pop out. So I think it'll still exist in that fashion.
Remote management stuff, definitely. Like, I don't want to have to set up a secure management system that all of my network devices will use and behave to according to, and then trust on that to work for, public management so that I can access my network if I'm not in my network. But for like just general business work stuff, yeah, totally. There's probably some level of that. I agree with you. I think the VPN might have a number of days ahead of it.
Yeah, like, something like Citrix or something like that that just captures whatever application you have in the background and pops it to you over either a web session or some special client, for a standard business customer. Yeah, then you don't have all these nightmares of, how do I scale my VPN concentrator to, handle this? You don't. It has management traffic and that's it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So, would you say something like what the U.S. government for like their laptops? You're just logging into a desktop that's hosted somewhere in a government server complex. I've got a few customers who do that, and it's like this crazy, ridiculous, long process to log in, but I'm sure you can make that better. But basically something like that, you're just logging into a remote desktop and you just have a little terminal, is what you think?
Or it's just web-based. Take whatever old crappy application you have and, run it through a web interface. I see Tommy appreciates my candor.
Yeah, because being an old and crappy web old crappy interface put on the web is gonna make it infinitely better.
Government stuff will lag because it always does. I think Illinois still has like 74 different financial systems because they're all on old separate servers and nobody has any money to make one new one, so they just keep spending money on old. But anyway, most business applications will be, QuickBooks, they made QuickBooks online instead of regular QuickBooks, and they're pushing people to that. So, over time, it'll just all move to web-based, and then they'll get a new UI, better or worse.
I think it's a natural progression of things. We're seeing a lot of stuff like, I don't use, so for Gmail, I don't use a physical client. I always just use the web interface. I've gotten so accustomed to it. And then like the data center, SharePoint, right? So it's basically just, we only used it for pretty much a file dump back and forth. So that's kind of just a version of Dropbox. If you don't want to pay somebody for a hosted version of it, you just sort of do that stuff. With Office 365, all that stuff's moving there. So it seems like most companies can do that stuff. And then, like Mike said, if you need access to an application, Citrix allows you to have a link on your desktop. You double-click it, and it's actually opening your remote session, but it just looks like you're running the app on your desktop. You don't really know that it's hosted somewhere else. So, I don't know. Seems like the natural move. I mean, there's still going to be some stuff that makes sense to keep in a data center, maybe behind a VPN. Like, we've seen some guys that do, in the petroleum industry, seismic stuff, so they'll pull in just a ton of data, and then they have these couple of racks of supercomputers that crunch the hell out of that stuff and spit out reports and, does all that magic. So you're still going to need access to that. Some, like Mike said, some legacy applications. But then again, Citrix can sometimes cover the front of that to make it a little bit cleaner. I don't know. There's some research scientists that do stuff here, and they have a lot of weird, funky applications. They have access to, like you said, Tommy, a lot of really super secure information that you want to add as many layers of complexity to get to as possible. I guess sometimes people will go for the lowest hanging fruit, right? So long as you have one extra layer of protection that somebody else doesn't, that's a pain in the butt, then, maybe they'll mess with somebody else's stuff instead of yours. I don't know. But I do.
That's always the hope.
Yeah. Just make it a little bit less convenient. Let's see. So I I've had some time to think here lately. We're all trapped in our houses, or should be if you're doing it right.
Not this guy.
Essential employee.
I'm essential.
You're essential.
Yeah.
I'm technically essential.
First
too.
Person in the. Yeah, apparently this is the first time anyone in the world has said that I am essential to them, and it was the U.S. government.
A meme I liked online. It was Maury Povich looking at a card, and he goes, your employer says you're essential. Your paycheck proves that to be a lie.
Another meme was the government says that you are essential. And another little line, this piece of paper that says, the hooker says that you're her favorite. And then the person below it says, but those are the same thing. They mean the exact same thing. yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I saw one that was like Ryan Gosling making this weird face, like, don't talk to me. And it said, the look I give non-essentials when they try and talk to me.
Yeah.
Good times.
Aren't you supposed to be home? Beautiful lines.
Oh, Facebook is so full of that. On these local townie groups. People who have just a whole bunch of Karens of the world taking pictures, I just see too many cars driving down my street. Why isn't everybody at home? Well, apparently your neighbors work.
Well, I don't know. It's like we drive by a park and there's kids all over the play equipment on the swings. And it's like, dude, come on. It's like at least make a passing attempt at this. This is ridiculous. But I'm not here to debate that stuff. Where I was going with this is that, I was cleaning out, obviously, a lot of stuff And I'm on the tail end of cleaning out my closet here. I basically had to clean just the space you see here, and my wife, like, floor to ceiling, cleaned the entire rest of the house in like 4 days, and I'm still at this. But I found my old CCIE book that I got. I went through that joke. I mean, it took me like 9 months, start to finish, to get the CCIE written, like to actually pass it. And I had like a pack of extra material that I had stuck in there that was like 3/4 inch thick. But I realized how long ago it was that I passed that, and it was like 9 years ago. So it's I'm not a CCIE candidate anymore. It was so long ago, you know. I was thinking, why am I hanging on to this? I guess it was, I felt like I had earned it. That was like the hardest single thing I think I'd ever had to like do on my own, and I guess I was keeping it as some kind of a trophy, some monument to my moral fortitude. But then I noticed also that it was buried in the back of a closet, and I didn't even realize it was there. So I tossed that joker in the recycle bin, and man, away it went. Do you guys hang on to stuff like that, like trophies of past victories? Heads of your enemies?
Yeah, No, I'm not even going to unblur the background because you just, all the shit. I will forever remember, we were moving and some of my cousins were helping us, my brother and I, pack up. And there was just years and years of crap piled up underneath our beds. And so it was like, we were like, move the beds, and we're just shoving stuff into bags or boxes or just in the trash. And I remember my cousin, she was arguing with her mom about helping us and continuing. Her mom was like, you have to help because they're family, blah, 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 blah. And she just says, but mom, they're pack rats. And I bless her heart. She was so right. Even as like a 10-year-old child, like, God, I'm horrible about it. And I'm always like, every few months I'll have a like little spurt where I'll throw a bag worth of stuff away, and then I feel bad about having done that and won't do anymore. But yeah, it's just terrible. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I threw away a ton. And there was a couple of things where I like my hand kind of hesitated in the air when I was getting ready to throw away. I was like, I was like, dude, I didn't even know this was in here. You know, I haven't seen it in years. Get rid of it. And my wife actually went through and picked out a couple of things and hung on to them. But I don't know. It's so funny. Like, I was going through that stuff and I was looking and I was like, I just don't care about this stuff. And I'm never going to use it. And anything that was actually salvageable, I tried to find it a new home if I could. Which is weird because you're not really supposed to do that right now. I don't know. I guess they could disinfect the stuff. It's, you know, whatever. But yeah, like I don't know, man. All this stuff, it's good, right? So it's giving me perspective, giving me kind of a new look on things. It's like if I go outside, it's so funny because the birds are finally starting to come back, you know, and I'm hearing them sing and stuff like that, and it's reassuring in a way, you know. It's like the world is still out there. The earth is still turning. We still all exist, and we're still going to exist tomorrow, and everything's going to be all right. I just, you know, it helps me reevaluate kind of what's important. I like that. And perspective is good for people, and a lot of people don't get it until something major happens in their life, and I hope this helps a lot of people find that one way or the other.
Well, to give you perspective of some of the crap I've built up, I have here the Encyclopedia of Electrical Circuits, Volume 7. I bought this 15 years plus, more than that, years ago. And I think I probably opened it up a couple times and played around with some of the circuit stuff. And now it just sits on my desk. $40, just, oof. Yeah, if anybody wants it, you know, just send me a message. I will send it to you. I'm never going to do electrical circuits again. It's just
the last book. The last book I maintain, because I don't have any other books. I used to get certification books, and now I just do like the PDF version. So I don't even keep real books. But it's up there on the shelf. Let's see if you can see it. Right there. It's Magnificent Desolation. It's Buzz Aldrin's like. What do you call that, biography? Yeah, and so somebody got it for me. It's actually a signed copy, so I've got Buzz Aldrin's signature in that thing. I just think that's super cool. So I'm hanging on to that one, but it's like, all right, man, I don't need books. I go through them and then I'm done with them. So I'm not gonna destroy the environment with those books anymore. Done with that. I'm purging. Mm. I'm purging. I'm letting it all go. I threw away probably 200 pounds of stuff. Well, maybe more. I had a bunch of old switches and stuff like that I got rid of. But I feel better. I feel lighter. I don't know about you guys.
Good. Good for you. That is a good thing to do. let's see here. What other fun stuff was showing up? Do you have any other notes?
Hmm. We're at about an hour 20, so it's usually about the time we stick a fork in it. You have any final thoughts?
I got my plea out into the world. So please, people, please, please don't use internal DNS servers to something that's not going to stay internal.
Good times. Or I've seen before where you put one internal DNS server and one external, right? And then send it.
That would be great. Beautiful. Perfect. So, but don't use two private IP addresses. Or this was the other customer. It was a public IP address, but it wouldn't respond to anything outside of their network.
Awesome.
I was like, what the? My good, great, beautiful security genius. Just sucks for me right now because it makes me look really, really bad. So,
I've seen it. I've seen where there was some remote offices, and they put public DNS servers in the DHCP options. Because if the VPN went down, then at least people could still do something. Except then that meant that they could never access any internal resource. So then they decided to put one of each. So that you would randomly get an internal resource and randomly not.
Good times.
So then I did statically set everything because I couldn't control the little Juniper box. I then just statically set every device in there, well, every PC in there to use the internal because they couldn't access Active Directory. They couldn't sign in. They couldn't do anything.
Excellent.
But I think it was mostly desktops. I don't think there were any laptops.
All right.
If you take your desktop home, that's a different story.
So let's put a bow on it. I'm going to leave one last thought, and that is Master Pancake is doing a live stream of Wrath of Khan tonight, I think at 9:30 Central on Twitch. So if you guys haven't checked him out, you should check him out. It'd be a lot of fun. Although I'm not going to put this out before then, so I don't even know why I bothered to say it. But definitely check out Master Pancake. They've been doing a lot of live streams, so it's helps them out. If you throw them a couple bones, because they're performers, you know, just like the bus boys and the waiters and, you know, those people that are having problems, you know, making ends meet at the moment. So help those performers if you can. So I will say, Mikey, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to go about that?
No.
You got it.
I'm busy. I should have some help starting on Monday, but then I also had to fire a guy on Thursday. So I don't know if I'm really getting anything.
That's right. He insulted your haircut, right? Had to let him go immediately. Such is life.
Well, you know, it helps when you're an employee if you do something, and he didn't. Huh. So
cool. Well, that's never stopped me before. So he's got to be better at hiding it.
The key is not doing things at a at a slow enough rate where you can't get fired. He obviously was too slow.
Well, such is life.
Yeah, that's the thing that everybody else in the company has figured out. How slow they can go and not be fired.
Well, it sounds like a fun contest. I'll try it sometime. Tommy, if you want people to find you out on the internet, how do they go about that?
Well, traditionally it's been the Brothers with Slack slash Mattermost, I guess now it'll be. But I actually, I've been doing contract work, and so I decided that I needed to get a company, and so I have a company, and I have a website now, and it's junk right now, but...
Junkrightnow.com.
LostCreek.tech is the website, and eventually I'll have all that filled out and stuff, and, you know, I'm hoping to spend some time on it this weekend and make it somewhat decent, and then finish up. I have some articles I was writing on some of the stupid shit I've done, like going full eBGP in my network. So each of my towers are full, just running BGP between them and the core, whatever else they're connected to. And I didn't want to do iBGP because then I would either have to do route reflectors or have to have all my routers connected to each other, which sounded like a huge pain in the ass. So I was like, oh, I'll just run it like the internet runs it. So going through how horrible of an idea that was and converting it from where we were, which was a statically routed idea or network, and the silliness involved with that. So it was fun. It was a huge project, and I think there's some information there that people might be able to use.
Looking forward to reading about it. Do you have an email on the new domain?
No, not yet. Slacker. But there will be an email address that you can reach me at on that website, so eventually I'll deal with it.
So you said that the new website is junk. It's not somebody's junk, right? There's not just a picture of someone's junk on there?
No, that's a default theme from WordPress.
Okay.
So
excellent.
I should have to get some junior high humor injected in there before you wrapped up.
All right. So if you guys want to find me, it's Greg at gregshole.com, or you can find me at my blog, gregshole.com. You can really easily find me at Slack, or I guess Mattermost now, as Tommy said. Really, that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me, honestly. I'm so much more responsive on there. I
just call you.
Yeah, well, there's that too. Just calls me to say hi now, that Mikey guy. Also, if you want to get access to the patron-only Slack or patron-only Mattermost, whichever one happens to be in existence when you join, that's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. And any questions, comments, please shoot them towards us. Thank you guys for listening, and honestly, thank you guys for being part of the community. It's a really weird time. The whole idea of self-isolation is bizarre to most people, but to be honest with you, I've been on an island for a really long time. You guys are my you're my anchor to other humans. So I don't know. I've already had my my community put together for a while. So if this can be part of your community, keep you sane, please jump in. Thank you guys, and talk to you soon.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.